34. Future Kuznetsky meets us at the Security Control Center, which is four times the size of what I'm used to. Where there were once three screens displaying a total of 27 camera feeds, there is now a wall of large flat screens surrounding one massive screen. There are at least 50 camera feeds from inside the facility, various points around the mountain, and what looks like a misshapen 3D puzzle of Black Creek. "Wait here," Langdon says, stepping inside the room. I can't hear what he's telling the two men monitoring the feeds, but large chunks of the wall go black. He's either hiding something from me or trying to keep me focused on his problems, and not those of the people I care about. When he's done, all videos from Synergy and Black Creek have disappeared, replaced by a large number of feeds from the facility's perimeter and the mountainside.
"You okay, dude?"
Kuznetsky whispered. "You didn't look great before, but now... what happened?" "I killed myself."
"You look pretty alive to m-"
Realization settles atop him like a lead blanket.
"Oh, shit."
He looks ready to lose control, but reels himself back in with a sniff and a stretch of his face.
"Did you learn anything from him?"
"Only that all his people are dead," I say, "except for you."
"Damn."
He leans his back against the wall. "What about you? What do you know?" I motion toward future Langdon. "About him. About when he's taking us."
"Wish I had answers, but..."
Kuznetsky shrugs. "What did he offer? Couldn't have been money."
"Why not?"
"Does he not know? Did I not know?" "This is a one-way trip." He squints at me.
"Bullshit."
"According to Langdon's younger self, we're creating new dimensions of reality with each new jump. Our future won't be there even if we could reverse direction and go back." He doesn't look dismayed, shocked, or even frightened. He looks pissed. Like he's just found out the Rolex watch on his wrist is a Casio in disguise. Like he's been conned. Because he has been. Future Kuznetsky is not my inside man.
"Come in,"
the elder Langdon says. I step inside the command center to find all the screens now displaying external feeds. The large screen holds a paused video of the forest, taken before our arrival in the Ice Age. I'm caught off guard when I see the rest of the large space. There are 12 terminals, all manned by men wearing VR headsets. The displays in front of them show aerial views of Synergy and the surrounding mountain. This is where they control the drones from. Given the large number of drones, both flying and grounded, I reckon that the machines can operate autonomously or under direct control. They're searching the surrounding mountainside, but for what? From above, I can see that the forest still exists, encased in thick snow, but still present. The tree line is just a bit further down the mountain, about where it began in my time, thanks to the strip mining.
"We've been losing drones,"
Langdon says, pulling my attention back to the big screen. "This is how it began." The video feed plays, showing a smooth recording of the forest. The image suddenly goes shaky and drops straight down. Then static. "Looks like your pilot ran into a branch," I say.
"That's what we thought at first, but the drone was self-piloting at the time, and they have a perfect track record with avoiding even the smallest obstacles. We sent a recovery team and found this."
An image fills the screen. The drone is lying on the ground, crushed and torn apart. "Then someone shot it out of the sky. I don't know if you've noticed, but there are a lot of armed and frightened people on the mountain.
There was no evidence of gunfire, and that doesn't explain the wreckage. It would take a very strong man with a sledgehammer to do that."
"Also not out of the realm of possibility." My doubt is frustrating him, but I can tell there's more. "Show me the rest." A second drone feed plays, ending in nearly the same way, except this one is smashed against a tree twice before the video ends.
"It was plucked from the air and manhandled,"
Langdon says, stating the obvious. But then he adds, "It was 20 feet up when that happened. It wasn't long after this that we started finding bodies." I nearly point out that there are a lot of bodies on the mountainside, too, which is ultimately his fault, but I can't deny playing a part in some of their deaths. A third video plays, and this time the footage is uninterrupted as the drone slides up to a corpse lying in a tree's branches. It's stretched out and bent, like all the joints have been popped out, or worse. Given the amount of blood soaking the man's body, it's possible his 1920s-style clothing is the only thing holding him together. The video feed switches again. This time it's a woman. She's lying on top of a tree, impaled by several branches, as though she'd fallen out of the sky. Another feed shows what's left of a Cherokee Indian, his arms and legs removed and piled beside his torso, most of the meat missing.
"You thought this was me?" I ask. "Future me? I can't imagine any timeline where I'd be a part of this."
"You were, are, a resourceful man. When faced with overwhelming odds, you generally find a way to even them. Given your history with psyops, I thought you might be trying to put the fear of God into me."
"Like killing innocent people?"
He shrugs.
"Fire with fire."
I decide a moral argument is not in my best interest, and that full disclosure in this case will benefit all of us. "I came across a body like this. The flesh was eaten by a large predator, probably a bear. If it's an extinct species, something with the power of a grizzly, that could explain the killings. I've also seen a large cougar stalking the mountain. Many predators are known to hide their kills in trees, so maybe..."
"It's not a bear,"
Kuzneski says. I glower at the man operating the displays.
"Show me."
"This was our first view of direct contact," the operator says, playing aerial footage of a drone flying 50 feet above the forest canopy. "Center of the screen, close to the horizon." When I see it, I'm not sure what I'm looking at. It looks like a fly buzzing straight up past the camera. But what appears to be close at first looks far away as it grows larger and closer. I identify the projectile as a basketball-sized rock just before it careens into the drone.
"Have you heard of anyone in the history of Black Creek that built a catapult?"
Langdon asks. I don't bother replying. He already knows the answer. "And I'm pretty sure that no one in the history of catapult building ever had enough skill to shoot a small moving drone out of the sky."
"You have another theory?"
I ask. "One that I am loath to subscribe to on the fact that it is both improbable and impossible." He looks me in the eyes. "Someone threw it." I couldn't throw that stone more than a few feet. I doubt the strongest man on earth could get it much further.
"Then this is something we agree on."
"What don't we agree on?" he asks, suddenly suspicious. "I just watched myself take a cyanide pill to avoid being tortured by your very own Dr. Mengele. I reckon a generous helping of revulsion is appropriate. I understand that you are defending what you've built, that Synergy was under attack from him, and that he took his own life. But there is no time where I will abide by torture." Standing my ground puts our faux relationship at risk, but letting all that be swept to the side like it was nothing, he'd see through it eventually.
"Well," Langdon grins, "if he was telling the truth, as you believe, there will be no need for such tactics in the future, or rather in the past."
He gives the operator a backhanded tap on the shoulder. "Play the last video." Unlike all the other video feeds, this one is at ground level, bumbling up and down as a tank-treaded drone rolls over uneven terrain. Its minigun is pointing straight out in the feed, like it's a first-person shooter video game. Then it stops. The camera whips from side to side, tracking a shadow of movement. The blur is so fast that making it out is impossible. I get a sense that I'm looking at a man, but the scale seems to be off, or the trees in this part of the forest are small. It disappears in a thick copse of trees. Is that it? I actually jump when a hand snaps into frame, grasping the minigun, wrapping meaty, thick, and pale fingers around the coffee can thick barrel. Then the whole vehicle is wrenched off the ground and flung skyward. The video records a spiral of forest and sky until it drops back down and goes dark. An image of the massive hand returns to the screen. It's human, but is far too large, too strong.
"What do you make of this?"
Langdon asks. I step closer, trying to take in the details. Aside from the very pale skin, it looks human, except not. Something is off. I place my finger on the massive index finger and then slide it over the knuckles one by one.
"My screen,"
the operator complains when my finger leaves a smudge. He falls silent when I continue counting aloud. 4, 5, I look at Langdon. 6.